This is one in a series of podcasts from the Hyatt Web Conference in Austin, 2011.
I wanted to talk about project management primarily because it's something that we all do, but a lot of us don't realize we're doing it. And I get tired of seeing the same boring stuff over and over again. And I read a couple of books about Attila the Hun. See, show's early. And it was really interesting because a lot of the principles that we talked about with leadership and how to win, and how to attack, and how to take care of things were really same principles that we could apply to project management. So some really cool stuff that's going on there, and I wanted to share that. You guys are awesome. All right. Appreciate it. And that concludes the presentation today. Wrong one. Let's try. There we go. Kill the door, let the show begin. So, Attila the Hun. There's a lot of things that we think of when we think of Attila, and the problem is we usually think very negative things. And I'll be truthful, he's not exactly the best role model for a personality. But he is a really good role model when it comes to getting things done. So if you can kind of isolate the things he did great from the things that were not necessarily so pleasant, we should be okay. So let's look at this in a whole lot more detail. Who was Attila? Well, there's a whole lot of things going on. First of all, Attila in his history started back in AD, and King Munzdunk had a son. This is a nomadic tribe. This is a people who lived off the land. They wandered around. They didn't have everything in store. There was really no culture other than the culture they carried with them. So they carried very little. They needed very little. That was one of the fundamental principles of this approach. I don't need a lot. I take everything with me. Okay? And in this, we talked about where he's from. And when he was born, I think he was like 8 or 9, his father was killed off. He was the king. Well, if there is a king of a nomadic tribe, essentially the head leader of the group. Things are kind of a little loose as far as interpretations of how they work. But this is the area that they're in, which is really kind of an interesting life area because they move all over the place. It's kind of following the seasons, also following the patterns. They're very aware of their nature, very aware of their surroundings. Again, key principles for project management. Pack lightly. Be aware of everything that's going on around you. Because usually you get sidetracked by things you didn't even understand at the moment. Oh, that network upgrade could break this. Oh, that might be good to know. So you need to be aware of the surroundings and what's going on. But more importantly, you need to be aware of people like this. Uncle Regula. He was awesome. So Attila had a very feisty personality. I can identify with that really easily. By age 12, he was questioning his uncle's authority because his father had died already. His uncle had stepped in his father's place, kind of not rightfully. And Attila's, you know, sassy little 12-year-old, who put you in charge? Why are you here? What's the deal? Pretty soon he was sent, and this is really cool, child hostage. I love this concept. I wish I was a child hostage. It would be rocking. Sent to Rome to Romanize the tribes of the other area, and in exchange, they send a child from Rome back to Uncle Regula. And so what they do is they kind of do a cultural shift. Well, really what has happened is the kids that were sent to Rome from all these other areas, it was usually societies that didn't have strong cultures. And what they were trying to do is Romanize their culture. So when they went to take over that country, they already had people in the area who knew what to do. Oh no, we learned in Rome you're supposed to do this. So they just give in right away. This is another good lesson. Keep in mind keeping those relationships and preparing for future battles that are coming up. But when Attila went to Rome, he didn't play that game. He's like, okay, you're trying to Romanize me? I'm a Hun. I am who I am. You're not changing me. So Attila also made future plans. I'm going to study how the Romans fight, how the Romans do all this stuff. They're trying to send him off to all these swank parties and, you know, trying to keep him in the cultural part. He's over in the military part late at night, running through, pacing the building, trying to figure out, how do I escape? How do I get through this stuff? What's going on? How do I learn from this enemy that has kidnapped me? And my father's brother is taken over, and he's an evil man. So he eventually escaped, got back to the Huns, which is really kind of interesting, because when he got back, he had a nemesis. I need one of these too. A nemesis. That's what everybody needs. It keeps you fighting. It keeps you going. And I don't mean necessarily a person, but you need like something to fight against, something to get your fire moving. And so Aetius was the kid that was switched. But all the kids that were switched in this child hostage program, they were trained as spies. They were family of the elite. They went there for the reason and the purpose of taking over that country. So the kids that went to the other countries, they were trained in all the war. They were trained in the politics. They were trained how the leadership worked. They were trained all the important families, all the trade routes, all the secrets. When they switched back and went back to Rome, Rome had the keys to their kingdom. Really simple program from a couple of kids. Amazing. They weren't high-powered. When Attila came back, it was awesome. Okay, so anyway, we'll skip that part. But Rome, kind of the center battle point. And then from here, Attila kind of, well, this is where mythology steps in. I don't believe all of it, so I'll just say what they tell you. By this time, his brother Bleda was now king. We're not exactly sure what happened to Regula. I'm pretty sure I know what happened. Horse accident, whatever. Attila came back. Brother's in charge. Cool. He's getting himself back into power. This is what I learned in Rome. This is what I did here. This is how I continued to learn to fight and be a Hun when I was in another country. And he was proud of who he was, and he was proud of what he did. And Bleda died in a hunting accident. And then Sword of God appeared. I need none of those too. Oh, be great. And next thing you know, Attila becomes king of a royal tribe of nomads. Again, kings loosely defined here. So the point is, this is the people that we're talking about. Very simple life. Not a lot going on, but the one thing they had was pride. They held it tight. They run through it all. Okay? So when you tie all this stuff together, you're looking at a man who was hardened. He's 18, 19 years old. He's already been held as a hostage. His father had died. His uncle kicked him off to another country. He was trying to be like brainwashed in another country, trying to maintain his identity from what he remembered as a kid. There's a lot going on in this guy's life that hardened him. So there's a reason why he had bad attitude. I'm not excusing him for it, but I'm just telling you. Well, of course, he got the Sword of God, so I guess it's all good. Anyway, so now let's switch gears. That's Attila's background, enough to at least get you kind of principles of what's going on. Now let's look at project management background. Unfortunately, this is nowhere near as exciting. There's no Sword of God. So, project management. This is Henry versus Henry. Because really, this is where project management starts. So in Henry versus Henry, we've got Henry Grant. He was the father of the controlling techniques. You've heard of the Gantt chart. This is the guy who started it all. He was kind of a visionary. He realized that you could plan stuff out in a way that you could identify dependencies, you could get things all linked together, you could find a control mechanism and organize your success. That's a huge first step. You know, otherwise, you're just kind of floundering around. Well, maybe I should do this, maybe I should do that. There's really no plan. This guy helped make a plan. It was really kind of interesting. So, and that's in 1910. Henry Fioli, though, he was more of a structural person. So in this regard, he identified that there are basic functions that happen in every single project, and we need to make those things work. So he was, those six management functions, how many people know what PMBOK is? The Project Management Body of Knowledge. If you go to the Project Management Institute, PMI.org, I'm a member of that group. It's really kind of fun, well, in a warped way, I suppose. They got lots of information. If you're doing tons of projects, you'll need that resource. Let me just put it that way. I'll extract the word fun. But the Project Management Body of Knowledge is founded upon the management functions that were identified here, plus the Gantt chart structure of making sure everything is organized to success. So these two pieces kind of come together. And if you look at these management functions that were put together, it's essentially the preparation. So it's the forecasting, the planning, the organizing versus the actual doing, the commanding, coordinating, and monitoring. As soon as you know, there's a famous quote, all great plans stop the moment you take your first step. Then you're in a monitor control and damage control situation. It's like, okay, I had a great plan, and then, oh, crap, the bridge is out. Okay, let's adjust. That's the way life is, though. Okay, so if we move on to some of the principles, though, this is where some of the differences worked in. You break those principles. You got the basic functions, but within those functions you have principles, and they kind of break down in this regard. A lot of this, if you think back to Attila, there's a lot of things that are going on in these principles that are also fundamentals of leadership and fundamentals of having the tenacity to do whatever it takes to get the job done, of having pride in what you're doing and fighting forward. So discipline, unity of command, unity of direction, subordination, remuneration, all of this stuff, it very easily applies to any military issue, but also applies to when we're fighting in projects. And I kind of view that as a fight, because if I don't fight for that project, it will die on its own. I'm the person who's pushing it forward. It is my command. We will push forward. We'll get it done. So that's the things that we're looking at. But as you look at some of these things, this is kind of a process mapping here where you got your different work breakdown structure, going over your weeks, and you get all your activities. This is kind of your typical Gantt stuff. And then you can also move into a little bit more formalized structure, MS Project, all that fun stuff. But it's when you get into this material and you start identifying where you got problems. How many people can read this? Got a couple in here? Not too many. All right, here's what's going on. You get a work breakdown structure. You identify every single task that you've got to do. You identify it with a number. You give that a duration and a priority. A duration, so T, it's going to take 3 months to get issue 10 done. When 10's done, I can execute 20 and 30, but T4 takes 4 months to finish. So I can't start 20 for 4 months. So what I'm doing is I'm looking for the critical path. The critical path is what is the bottleneck in this thing that's going to slow me down. The critical path is where I put all my emphasis until I'm darn sure that thing is locked in. Once that critical path is knocked out, the rest of it I have a little bit of flex room. The critical path, I have no flex room. So doing charts like this for a PERT chart, it helps me find out where I need to focus my attention, because my attention needs to be focused on the first bottleneck in the road. And so that first bottleneck is that 3 months between 10 and 30. Because after that, the fastest duration is 5 months start to finish where I can get to 50. So I need to work on this. I need to break it all down. I need to understand the relationships of the project, create it so I know where my attentions are supposed to be focused. Again, kind of like the Gantt chart, but this one's more specific about keeping things moving. So project management really didn't start in concept until the 1950s, which is kind of fun. That's where the modern project management came in. But when it comes in really tight, the concepts are actually based upon construction industry. And this is when the time we're starting to do the big economic boom. We're doing all this really cool stuff, and we're trying to be as efficient as possible. This is called capitalism at its best. How can we make more money getting the job done faster? Let's organize better. How do we organize better? Well, look at these two guys. They did some stuff back in the 1900s. Let's carry that forward, see what we can do for these principles and get things to be more efficient. So architects, engineers became the first experts to manage the projects, which is why most project management stuff is very simple and a lot of diagram stuff. There's a lot of detail, but it's not pages and pages of prose. We keep it short, sweet, get the job done. Because engineers, if you haven't noticed, don't type a whole lot. They do a lot of number crunching and they get out of the way. So when we're looking at this, it took about, 19 years later, and the PMI was formed. The Project Management Institute actually certifies project managers, and they help keep things organized. And if you've ever seen anybody and they've got the initials PMP, Project Management Professional, at the end, they know their stuff. Or PGMP, if they're a program manager, that means they can manage multiple programs at the same, manage multiple projects at the same time. There's lots of different levels here. It's really, really interesting. If you're managing a lot of projects, you may want to go and investigate a little bit. I've done everything except take the test for my PMP. So that's my next phase. I'm trying to figure out when to fit that in. So anyway, this is the basics of project management. It's where are we right now? And sometimes that's hard to do. And then where do we want to go? And how do I get everything back on track again? It's kind of like you're on a road trip and you're driving with a bunch of kids and you stop at the way station or gas station. Where are we at? Get a map. Look it up. This is where we're at. Where are we going? What road do we need to get there? You know, there's all these different things. It's the same concept. So it's not really complicated, but when you look at that for the management or for the control methods, you actually look at that one little part there was just the monitoring and control. So overall, project management, when you break it down to the basic phases, the initiation, we usually have no control over. We're usually thrown a project. here, do X. I don't have control over the budget. I don't have control over the time. I'm told what to do and when. It's then up to me to fight to make sure I have enough resources so we can begin. Then we go into this planning phase. And we can plan and plan and plan, but as soon as you take that first step, then you're taking your execution, you're immediately monitoring, and you're going back to planning. You keep cycling there until you run out of stuff to do, then you close it out. So it's not a complicated thing, and it's very intuitive. That's the cool thing, because most engineers put this stuff together. It's not really complicated. So, what does Attila have to do with project management? So I've looked through a lot of principles that Attila has done, and looked at the leadership principles, and keeping in mind that I've extracted his personality as much as I could out of the situation, because we're not looking at that. But we have specific advice for project management from Attila. Rule number one, do not waste your energy. When he was fighting in Rome, he used every single moment he had, focusing on learning, trying to get out, trying to learn more about their culture and keeping things moving. A warrior's worst fear is that he will be assigned to a task that the chieftain does not want completed successfully. If you are assigned a junk task, you are viewed as junk. If it is not a worthwhile project, do what you can to remove it. There's no reason to fight it forward, because if no one cares about it, they're just keeping you busy digging holes. So, next thing. One tribe, one mind. This essentially falls into the chain of command. A chieftain who consistently inspects the work of the warrior finds they consistently produce better results. When you're a leader, you've got to be down there. You've got to be checking with the people. How are things going? This is part of that monitoring stage. Where are we at on the map? Are we closer to our destination? Are we having any problems? Is there a detour ahead that we need to be taking? Is the road blown up? We need to go way around. A chieftain ignores the top performers. If the chieftain ignores their top performers, they lose their winning edge. The people who are doing a great job, don't ignore them and chew out the people who are doing a poor job. You got to make sure those people who are doing a great job are well appreciated and cared for. Even if it's just stopping in every morning saying, hey, how you doing? Is there anything I can do for you today? I know you're doing a great job. I'm here just to stay out of your way, but if you need something, you let me know. I'm right here for you. It goes a really long way in keeping that rapport with the team and keeping everybody focused on what's ahead. If a chieftain ignores weak performers, they will never develop that winning edge. Now, just like I said, I come in every morning, if I have a team who's not performing well, or I have the guy who's doing really good, and if the next guy is not doing so good, I'm going to spend a little bit more time, without being abusive, and trying to get them to move it up, step it up a little bit, and give positive reinforcement. If that doesn't work, we do corrective actions. That's a whole different approach. A chieftain who critiques past battlefield performances for the warriors increases their odds of winning future battles. In project management, this is usually part of the close, but we also do periodic stops. When I close out a section or a phase, I review that phase. What went right? What went wrong? How can we do things better? We close out the next phase. I do it again. We close out the project. We give a couple days decompression time, and then we sit down. We do an after-action review. It's a traditional military technique. We go through in detail the brutal stuff. What went right? What went wrong? What was really good? What sucked really bad? In fact, I even do this with the committee. When we finish the conference here, we actually have an after-action review planned. We've got a dinner off-site. So Wednesday night, we'll be reviewing what we did here at this conference and planning and applying those principles. Things that went good, we'll keep doing. Things that did not go good, we'll find a way to fix it. Next year, we'll make it better. You've got to keep going back and re-emphasizing this stuff, though. Chieftains create strong moral discipline in the tribe when they train their warriors and their huns well. Tell them what's expected. It's the first key principle. Give them the tools and the leadership to win. If you don't provide training, your team will not win. You're not giving them adequate tools to actually complete the job. If you don't have money for the training, be creative. Find somebody else who's got it, who maybe can do some OJT. Even if it's not at your own institution, see if you can piggyback on somebody else you met here. If you can lean on somebody a little bit, can you give a little coaching or a little guidance? We're having trouble with this. It's not my area of expertise. I don't know this language. Could you help out my person? Do whatever you need to do to get the job done, but don't have your blinders on. Think wide. There's lots of ways to get resources. Be creative. Next fundamental principle, dodging arrows. The best chieftains focus on dominating the Romans instead of inciting internal division and civil war. This essentially is to stop the bickering. If I have people complaining and it's out in the hallway, I ask them to come in and see me. I said, in my office, you can say whatever you want. You can complain all you want. You can let your hair down. You can scream and holler, jump and yell. I don't care. When you go out in that hallway, you're going to smile and you're going to put on the team face and you're going to move ahead. But you're not going to bring everybody else down from your bad attitude. So if you have a problem, you can come say it to me. That's fine. I need to hear what you really think. And if there's a problem, we'll fix it. But you can't be out there bringing everybody else down. And if you're having a bad day, take a day off. Because it's going to really kill the morale. So, big one. No warrior should ever be expected to take an arrow for the misdeed or mistake of a chieftain. If you screw up, own it. Own it now, own it fast. I have a principle in my office. If I screw up, I march right down to the CIO immediately. I sit in his office, say, hey, Eric, I screwed up again. And he always kind of laughs. And I said, my goal is to beat everybody else to your office telling me I screwed up. Because it goes much easier if I admit it than if somebody else comes down and say, hey, did you hear what this dork did? No. I need to be the first one there. And that also sets up a guiding principle between me and Eric. He has a rapport with me now that I walk in, he knows whatever I'm going to say is brutally honest, it's in his face, it's right there. The good, the bad, the ugly, it's right there on the table, you don't have to guess. Everything's transparent. So do that right away. And if you screw up, don't let your team take the fall. Don't blame it on somebody else. Just own it and be done with it. It ends a lot of the bickering. And it also gives a lot of respect for the person who admits they were wrong. So keep this stuff in mind. Acting on dumb decisions does not improve them. You may want to get that tattooed somewhere. It's going to be great. Competent warriors avoid acting on a chieftain's dumb decisions and seek to provide counsel to them instead. I have done this many times as well. I get a command. I need you to do X. That's the wrong thing to do. We shouldn't be doing that. I told you to do X. I'm like, I'm telling you, this is really, really bad. If we go down this path, we're going to fail. We cannot fail. This is a high-profile project. We cannot do this. I'm telling you to do it. I only push three times. On the third time, I walk out. I then find somebody else I can push on. I'll call the CFO. Rob, I'm telling you, if we go down this path, we're going to fail. Did you talk to Eric? Yes, and he will not listen to me. I'm telling you, I'm worried about this from the institution. If we go down this path, we're going to fail. We can't do this. He's like, well, maybe the three of us should talk. I said, I'm telling you, he's not listening to me now. I said, if you guys both tell me to do it, I'll do it. But just know that I've voiced my opinion. And this has happened a couple of times. And out of the three times, twice, they both apologized to me because I was right. It later bit us in the rear end. The one time I was wrong. I'm like, okay, I'm sorry. I misinterpreted the situation. My bad. But at least you'll know what I think and where I'm saying, how I'm moving forward. Practical dreaming, another critical function for project management. Huns readily follow chieftains who improve their quality of life. It's a simple concept. Do something to help them. Most of us have very little budget, at least I assume. If you have very little budget, what can you do to provide quality of life? We were getting ready to start a $1.5 million project. Things are really hectic. All my team was freaking out. I spent $40. I bought a whole bunch of hot dogs, threw them in a crock pot, got a pot of chili. We had chili dogs for lunch that day. Nothing improved morale like that $40. It was amazing. It was worth it to me to get them out of that slump so they come in on day one and they're actually, okay, you know what? Yeah, we can do this. It got them out of that negative attitude. It got them focused. It was worth that $40. It wasn't that big of a deal. To them it was because I didn't tell them. I put signs up all over the place. Hey, come for the chili dog party. It was goofy, it was silly, it was functional, it worked out great. So do things creative, do whatever you can to improve their quality of lives, even if it's adjusting their work schedule a little bit so they can work from home a little bit more or they can be flexible in their hours. Chieftains accomplish greater feats when they focus their warrior on tribal rather than individual goals. I always have a fundamental principle in the office, and that is of stewardship. And stewardship works like this. I currently occupy the chair of the Director of Applications and Development. One day, I will eventually move on. That does not mean I own the chair. It is not Dan's office. I'm simply acting as that role. I need to do the best job in that role for the institution that I can. So it's not me, it's the role I'm performing. So if you're the chair of biology, your job is to be the best chair of biology possible. It's not Jeff's shop, it's the biology shop at the school. So you need to keep your mind on the right thing. It's not an individual thing, it's the group thing. We're in this together, we're part of the larger organization. And if you take that attitude and you preach that attitude and you get them to believe that attitude, it resolves almost all conflict. That turf war goes away quick. It's really, really nice. A chieftain's greatest reward lies in helping the Huns prosper. I will fight to get my people a raise. I don't worry about me getting a raise. If my people get a raise, they'll be much more successful, in which case I will eventually get a raise. I put my emphasis on them. My job is to make them successful because they're making me successful if they're successful. It'll come back to me eventually. Karma will catch up to you. It'll be good. Cultivating allies. This is a struggle too. Wise chieftains do not march into battle against a clearly superior foe without first strengthening their own forces with those of an ally, a common sense practice. I usually call this advocating out in the field. I find somebody who's open to the project, somebody who might be a little bit opposed, and I try to have a conversation with both of them together at the same time. That way I can get them to kind of work together a little bit, soften the territory a little bit, pay attention to my surroundings. Remember, Attila was in an area, you always had to pay attention to everything going on around you. You never know when you're going to get sidetracked. The more friends you have helping you out, the easier everything's going to be. When developing allies, do not meddle in their affairs. They have no concern to you. This is a hard one. Because usually when you're trying to build an ally is usually only good if they're an ally above you. If they're above you, hey, look, a new pawn. I can move it all over the place. You can help to a point, but be careful. And don't be afraid to push back. You say, you know, I'm doing this and brought you in on this project because it directly affects you. I respect your opinion. I want your input. However, you're asking me to do stuff that's way outside the realm, and I'm not necessarily as comfortable with that. I appreciate our relationship here, but I really question your judgment on using me in that way. It's a hard conversation to have, but again, I try to be as transparent as possible. It solves a lot of problems. People don't have to guess what you're doing or what you're focused on. You will have confrontation, unfortunately, so get used to it. Chieftains should avoid doing battle when both winning and losing will cost too much. If you're going to do that project, it's going to cost you a fortune. It's going to kill your team. Is it worth it? You know, you've got this incredible project. You've got a very tight deadline. They're going to have to work tons of overtime for very little. You know, it's going to kill them. Why do it? There has to be a really compelling reason to do it. And if there's that much importance on it, there should be some really compelling compensation at the end of it, in which case there's enough reward for your team to do it. So don't kill your team uselessly on this stuff. Often the chieftain's greatest advances from the Huns come from a single chieftain's courage to buck tradition by leading the tribe on the difficult, unpopular course to innovation. I don't think this is anything new to you guys. We live in Web. This thing changes every couple of weeks. We got to start all over again. We're used to innovation. You know, I'm told to invent something new. How do you do it? I don't know. We'll figure it out. Let's go. We'll come up with some new way. This is something that I think we're all comfortable with here, so we'll keep moving. But in other crowds, it's a real hang-up. Weak chieftains, when faced with confrontation, often do the easiest thing, nothing. So that doesn't necessarily avoid the risk. When they do nothing, they contribute nothing of consequence to the tribe. You've got to actually step out of your comfort zone. And if you see something coming and it looks risky, identify that risk, handle that risk, do what you can to move it forward or move it out of the way. But don't just sit there. You know, it's kind of like sitting there watching a train wreck. You're just drawn in. You're like, I've seen people get hung up like that. They got this big project. They just, I don't even know where to begin. I'm like, do something. First, move. I mean, that's one step at a time. Oh, one of my favorite ones. Favoritism. I have favorites in my office. They don't know who they are because I'm harder on them than anybody else. It's not necessarily fair, but I'm really trying to pay attention to make sure I don't fall into the favoritism part. Second-rate chieftains are quick to admonish talented warriors who disagree with them about anything. essentially, if you take your top performance, oh, that wasn't so good. To build up your own ego? No, no, no. You're doing it backwards. You need to be building them up. That was awesome. You did an incredible job. I'm so proud of you. You could advance. You could be taking my job here soon. Don't worry about that stuff. Just help them succeed, and you will be rewarded eventually. First-rate chieftains learn from disagreements with talented warriors and encourage them to challenge their ideas. If you are so stubborn you will not listen to somebody who is capable and an expert in their field, you're a fool. I'm sorry to say it. I've got a lot of fools in my area. They won't listen to common sense. And a lot of times we hire these experts. They come in. They still don't listen. So what are we doing? It's just silly. This is my favorite one. Just get a dog. Get a pet rock. Get something. You don't need a pet in the office. I equate this to being a yes person. You know, if I come into an office and somebody asks my opinion and I have something negative to say, I usually say, are you sure you want to hear my opinion? Because I'm going to be honest. Most of the time they retract the offer. Because I'll be very honest. I'm sorry, this is a really stupid idea. I think this is foolish. I respect your judgment, but it's dumb. If I have something positive to say, I'll throw it out there first. But if I'm quiet, there's usually a reason I'm quiet. I'm trying to be polite. But if they ask, hey, you asked. But I do give them a warning. Risk-taking, something you can't get without. A tribe without chieftains and warriors that are willing to take risks never achieve greatness. I have a team right now that's kind of struggling. We're on the edge of some really, really awesome things, but we've got 5 vacancies in that branch. And they are struggling, and they're coming up to me every day. This place is falling apart. I'm like, are you kidding me? This place is rocking. Like, how do you see it's rocking? This place is falling apart. We have all these vacancies. I'm like, you guys are maintaining with half the staff. That is incredible. When we fill this staff, we are going to be running ahead of everybody. You guys are doing great. It's just a change in perception, but they need to hear it. They need to hear that leadership. They need to move forward. Like, you guys are doing awesome. Don't be worrying about it. We'll get it going. Huns who never fail are ill-prepared to deal with the bitterness and disappointment they will encounter as a warrior. All warriors fail from time to time, but failing never stops a warrior from pursuing victory. I have screwed up so many times, it's amazing. But I learned from them. If you don't learn from your mistakes, then don't make them. But you never know what you're capable of doing until you step outside your comfort zone and try something new. I learned a lot about project management in the beginning because I screwed up really, really bad time and time and time again. I wouldn't identify all the resources. I wouldn't identify all the stakeholders. I wouldn't get all the right allies in place. I'd start the project and then realize, oh, it was a worthless project. Oops. Okay. We'll start over. That was wasted resources. It took time for me to figure out what was going on. So you need to be ready for those things. Your honor is your armor. And this is tough. Secrets are exposed as soon as they are known to 3 Huns or 1 Roman. It's true. If you have something secret, keep it to yourself. You're really itching to share it with somebody? Write a note to yourself and then burn it. Do not. If you have something that absolutely has to be kept secret because of confidential matters or because of HR or because of some big project or funding hasn't come through yet, shut your trap. Don't say it. Because if it fails and you said it, you look like a fool. So you got to be careful of this stuff. Huns must be trained to serve the tribe's interests so that when they're tempted to make a quick personal gain at the expense of the tribe, they will instead do as they've been taught. If I treat my people with respect time and time and time again and do whatever I can to bend over backwards to help them at all times, I will have their respect. And if they have the offer to go somewhere else or to do something else, to take code that we've written and go off and do their own thing, they could still. But if I treated them with honor the entire time and they respect me, I have hopes that they will in turn do the right thing and not walk off with the keys to the kingdom, in this case, the knowledge. In order to fulfill the expectations of office, a chieftain is sometimes a very different person in public from the person in private. No worthy chieftain disgraces the title even in private. That's why I have my office and it's set up in as a very comfortable zone for the people who have I've had a couple of people in here who might have been in my office once or twice. I've got a nice couch. It's very relaxing. It's almost like a living room. When that door's closed, you can say whatever you want. It doesn't matter. It's very relaxed. It's a private area. But I still keep in mind that I'm at work. There it is again. So, you need to keep in mind that, you know, even though you're letting your hair down, you want to vent, and it might be a Friday night, and you're out with some friends, and you're having pizza someplace, and you're having a beer, do not let it slip, and do not vent in that environment. If you need to vent, again, write yourself a love letter or a hate letter, and then burn it later. You just keep it to yourself. But this honor goes a really long way. So if you look at all this advice from Attila, I've kind of extracted all that negative personality, focused on what he had done in his vision, his life, twisted it all around and attached it to the project management principles. The whole point is there's a lot to learn from these guys. And I actually did an additional studies, Sung Tzu, Art of War, incredible stuff. So Genghis Khan, Attila the Hun, Sun Tzu, and I called it the War Room. I had a whole workshop set up that we did. It was really, really fun, very intense. And each one of these guys had a whole different attack method on how they solve problems. None of them were really great personal individuals, but they have a lot to teach us. You know, anybody who can gather tribes and bring them together when they had nothing, create a culture and an army out of pretty much nothing, they packed light, they move fast. There's a lot of stuff we could learn from these guys. So, this is Attila, and this is what you do. You get paid for your bad days. The good days are free. The bad days, you get all your paycheck in 1 hour. That's the approach you got to take. You know, it's the tough decisions you make, the tough things you have to deal with. That's what you get paid for. The easy things anybody can do. The thing that sets you apart from everybody else is that you can make those tough decisions. You can make those calls. You can organize it. You got some stopping point, you find a way through it. But you got to take the blinders off, look around, be aware of all your surroundings, be aware of all your allies, leverage everything around you. You will always find a solution. It may not be the easiest one, it may not be the simplest. But Wes Roberts wrote a really fun book, and this is where a lot of the principles came from. Victory Secrets of Attila the Hun. There's also another one, Leadership Secrets of Attila the Hun. And really cool book set. If you want, pick those up. Really, really entertaining. I usually leave it around the office. It kind of scares people. They walk in like, I'll come back later. So it was kind of fun. So anyway, with that, we have a couple of moments to answer a few questions. If you guys want to throw some stuff at me. Yes. 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 When I am told to do something, and in private, I've talked to the leadership, I tell them I will play the party line. The same thing when I pull my people in my office, I tell them, you know what, I'm tired of your grumpy attitude, get off the pot and you play on the team. I say, okay, I'll play on the team. I will toe the party line, I'll do what you need me to do. And I will tell them, okay, this is what we're going to do. And if they grump, said, you know what, we've had a discussion in detail with the upper management. I understand what you're saying. I have addressed that with them. They're sure that this is the direction to go. I trust them as well. Let's move forward. And in a couple of cases, I was right. In one case, I was wrong. That's okay. I'll admit that. We're okay. But, I mean, you have to play the same role that you're expecting your people to play. And if you don't, you're a fool too. So, on the same token, I gotta do both sides of the fence there. Yeah. In the cases that are there, I can't really talk detail, unfortunately, but I usually do have information, and when things are thrown at me, I always go by my gut instinct. If something feels wrong, it's wrong. I haven't identified it yet. I haven't reasoned it out. I mean, if you've read Blink, Malcolm Gladwell, it focuses like, you know, if there's something wrong and you just get that instinct something's wrong, Trust that instinct. Don't override it. Trust it. Just hesitate a little bit. Examine it. Figure out what's wrong with that thing. Or if you get something, you're like, you know what? This is going to win. There's no way this is going to lose. Trust that instinct too. You know, you've got an innate ability just to assess things really quickly, make a snap decision, and just ride it out. So if you haven't gone through that book, I'd try that. Did that answer your question or kind of waffling? Okay. Let me add a little bit more to that piece then. The two people that I'm talking about, I'm very acutely aware of their communication style. I'm also aware of their schedule, and I know that they make snap decisions. So if I took time to go back and do much more research, I knew it would have already been passed. That opportunity, the ship would have sailed, I'm lost. I had to execute quickly. So that was the reason why I had to jump in quick. I had some information at my fingertips, but not enough where I felt it was a full report. And what I was really hoping for is, okay, let's examine this in more detail. That never happened. A snap decision was made. No, you're going to do it anyway. Okay, but I just want to go on record that that's what I said. I'll support the party line. We'll do what we need to do, but I've said my piece. Yes? Just smile. It's all you could do. I've got a, you know, I walk up and down the hallway, and you got two options. You can smile or you can cry, and one of them's dignified. So if you have to fake the smile, fake the smile. Do what you got to do, you know. But I'm foolish all the time. That's okay. And I make fun of myself all the time. I'm like, oh, well, I goofed up again. Life goes on. Yes.
You talked about planning and implementation, measurement, and going through. Mm-hmm.
Scope control. Most projects, you've got to maintain scope control all the way through. And it's real easy to say, oh, you know what? It'd be really cool if I can do this one little part here. And while I'm here, I can do, all of a sudden, you're 10 feet away from where you should be. And a lot of times, I'll have a very quick touch base meeting with my team weekly, sometimes more frequently, depending upon how close the deadline is. Where are we at? Well, I'm working on this. I'm like, wait a minute, that is not part of this. Drop that. We'll come back to it later when we have time. Stay on task here. Let's get this part done so we succeed. So it's a tough thing to do, and I have to make that call. And I've had to do that many times, saying, okay, that's outside the scope of this project. We'll put it on for later. We'll come back to it. We'll notify the people who come back to it. We'll document it so I have a list. But I definitely throw it off the list so we get it out the door. Okay, last one. Yes. Mm-hmm. Potentially. Best thing is to have fun when you do it. And then shortly after that, I usually have a failure party. We take our biggest failure and we celebrate it because we learn the most from it. It took a while for my team to kind of relax and get into that mode, but most of the time they're like, oh my gosh, he's making fun of me. No, that's not the intent. We learn so much from this one piece, and it has nothing to do with you. I did not chew you out. I did not reprimand you. I didn't write you up. It's just a mistake. It's no big deal, but we learn from it. We learn so much from some of this stuff, we'll never do it again. Future time savings, that's great. So, okay, I need to wrap up here, but I will hang out in the hallway and stuff. Yeah. Anything else?
That's it. I think that's plenty.
Yay.
Great.